but that's all.
Okay.
Okay. So, and he's leaving again. So, first of all, this is the last of the all-out shearing, until over the summer. People start going away, and I learned the young people over the summer, and afterwards we'll see what happens. This is the second half of the shear we started last week. Was everybody here last week? If not, I will briefly, but everybody forgot what we said. You know the old story about the rabbi? Every Yom Kippur gives exactly the same speech. So after the second one, they say, maybe he forgot. But the third one, same speech. So they go over to him and they say, Rabbi, you know, we want to continue saying to you. Yeah, so tell me what I said. He says, what do you expect to remember from year to year? Right? So I don't think you remember from weeks. I will just barely get over the problem. We know how, why is it bad things happen to good people? Why does suffering happen in the world to people who apparently don't deserve it? And why do people who do deserve to suffer seemingly have a great life? Not everybody, but some. So before we got into the specific approaches, we went got had some possible answers. But the first thing I said was that it doesn't imply the death itself, but death for the person may or may not be something bad. And also, according to some many opinions, that free will is so important that God does not choose to interfere with free will, even if people will suffer. And therefore, he made the choice not to interfere. And therefore, we can't say, why didn't God make the Nazis miss? Or the Nazis, you know, disappear with a sickness all of a sudden one day. Right? We can't ask that, but we can ask on other things that have nothing to do with specifically man acting to man. Okay? So that's the first thing we said. So then we said, well, let's define suffering. To you, suffering is one thing. To me, suffering may be something else. To you, suffering may be listening to Amzel speak week after week. Right? So what is the definition of suffering? Is psychological suffering, physical suffering? A major league baseball player that is an all-star every year, one year he has an average season, he may be suffering more inside than most other people. But he has a good season, he's a major league player, he's making $1 million, but he could be suffering. So we didn't talk about what's the suffering, but we said, "Lo ra'iti tzadik ne'ezav," I never saw a tzadik suffering, because a tzadik is someone who knows not to suffer when things bad things happen. So we said that's a possibility, but it didn't, you know, didn't pass the, if you want to call it, the eye test. And we said the second thing is that there's no such thing as a tzaddik. How do we define a tzaddik? Everybody has the whole Torah is filled with the great tzaddikim who did some terrible things. So how do we, so maybe that's why they're getting punished. But to say that all the suffering is because, even though persons aren't really a tzaddik, very hard to say that. So we said, going back, just, sources that we did, and we said the first approach, it says in the Torah, that just parents, all parents, cause a lot of suffering to their children. Intentional suffering. I'm not talking about the non-intentional. They did non-intentional, you can't control. But we don't call it suffering, we called it teaching. We called it life. You have to grow up. And when you grow up, you can't grow up without learning that things you do wrong have to be corrected. So the first thing it says in the Torah, God punishes and brings suffering in order that we learn the lesson, just like a parent who comes and brings suffering to their child and causes them, and we're supposed to take the lesson to the suffering. What we do with that, or we don't connect the dots, that's our problem. We have to connect the dots more. Over the weekend, I came up with a thing that somebody had said in a different context. In a context. I said, we have to be more observant Jews. We say we're observant Jews. We may be Shomrei Mitzvot, but I don't think we're observant enough. When something happens to us that's not good, we have to observe and say, what is God trying to teach me? And if that's what it says in 22, and we'll go from there. Okay? אם רואה אדם שיסירים בינלאו יפשפש מעשיו, the person should say, what did I do wrong? שנאמר בסוד דרכינו. Okay, then it says, and if he sees that he didn't do anything wrong, it says, יפלא בביטול תורה. There were people who really, who tzadikim, well, he wasted time and he could have learned Torah, Shreya Geveret, etc., etc. The Yim Tola, Velo Matza, he didn't even do, and then they talk about Yisurim Sha'aba, which I don't want to get into right now. Okay, now, how do we know when the suffering that we're feeling is coming from God for something specific? Again, God doesn't write a little note every time we suffer telling us what it's connected to. And it wouldn't be much of a life if every time we did something wrong, something would go in our brains and say, you did this wrong, you're suffering, because then we wouldn't have any free will. We would be afraid to do anything, right or wrong, because, you know. So therefore, we not know. So source 23 gives us an idea. It says something very fascinating. In terms of recognizing God in the world, there are a lot of things very difficult to recognize God. But when it comes to measure for measure, that concept was not taken away. What does that mean? If we can say, let's say something, let's talk about suffering. If, I don't know, you're just not in the mood. Three people come and ask, I don't know if this happens ever in Ashkelon, but in Yerushalayim, all the time, especially late at night, you get collecting money for Chanasikdala, collecting for this, collecting for that. And the last thing you want to do at 10 o'clock at night is to go to the door and do it. And so I would say, if that happens and you intentionally neglect, let's say, three people don't come to the door, or you give them less or whatever, and the next day you lose money, right? I think not the exact amount. I would connect that and say, listen, God's trying to tell you, don't ignore these the people who really need it. Okay? And that's an example, midah keneged midah. It has to be connected in time, and it has to be connected in kind, which I'm not going to go into, because we don't really go through it, but that's how we have to understand it. Okay. So that's what we talked about last week. Now, we're going to come to, let's see. I want to finish, so I want to make sure we can do the right things. This is very, very interesting. Okay? The Chamalev was told the following story.
Well, where are you?
You'll see. The following story of the Chamalev was not in here.
Okay?
Says the following, story. Two people don't know each other, go into the same hospital for the same disease, and in the same room. So they're taking it identical, because they put people with the same disease in the same wing, right? And taken care of by the same nurses,
one
same
live,
doctors,
one
whatever. Right? So what happens?
One live, one die.
No. They both live, it wasn't life threatening or whatever. Okay. But when they go out, or not even go out, when the people come in after 2-3 days to visit, and they say, well, how are they treating you here? They go, one person says, doctors, they just don't care. We're just flesh and blood to them. We're not people. They don't call us by their names, and they don't this and that. And I complain, and nothing. They don't care. And the nurses, they never have time for us. And then same room, same nurses, same people. The other person says, oh, they're so sensitive to their needs. They are really, really terrific. It's just unbelievable. They're making me so much feel so much better just because they really care. How's that possible?
What right? Is the different perception?
Because they go in with a certain, everybody goes in with a certain prejudice before you go into any situation. We read about it last week in the Torah and then with the Meraglim, right? Right? But we see the same thing is true in one page of the following. Source 26. That's part of why I bring it, but this is what the Nakama said. I think it's the Alshin. Vayavo marata v'lo yachlu l'shtot mayim ki marim hein. Okay? Water in Hebrew is plural, right? So they couldn't drink the waters because the waters were bitter, right? They were bitter, right? But what the Alshin says, the waters were fine, right? Who was bitter?
The people. Lo yachlu ishtov mayim ki marim hain. They were bitter, for whatever reason. So sometimes people are bitter and what is suffering to one person is not suffering to another person. But if you continue the story, so they sweetened the water, the people drank, and then God says very clearly, the last verse in this 26, if you keep the Torah, you keep the mitzvot, you keep a Jewish way of life, you won't get sick. But if you do get sick, it says in the Torah that we should look at it as a punishment for we did something wrong. Okay? What it is, etc. So all these things we have to, again, put in the proper perspective. Okay? Alright? I'm just trying to, okay. Source number 30. It says it very clearly. The message. The reason why you are punished, the reason why you are suffering, it's to help the person realize that they're doing something wrong. Right? Say, what did I do wrong? How can I be a better person? So the first thing we have to understand, and it's not going to answer all the questions, but we have to take it as a lesson. Our parents, our teachers, our whoever. Thank you.
Do you understand me?
Don't you know? So that's the first approach. Okay? Okay. And if we again, if we had more time, source 32 and 33, the most unbelievable, if you will, call it Baal Tshuva story in the history of the Jewish people, probably the history of the world, was a guy named Menashe. His father, Chizkiyahu, restored Torah to the Jewish people, and he went and he worshipped every idol possible. And he was taken away in chains, and he was brought to Babel. And when he's about to die, you go through the story, it's an unbelievable story, that Menashe went through his Rolodex of Avodah Zarah and prayed to each one, and none of them helped him. So he said, okay, I'll try God. And he did it sincerely, and God answered him, and it turned his life around, and he became a Baal Tshuva. Okay? Why am I telling this story? It's because he suffered, but he took it seriously, he understood that it was for a reason, and he turned his life around. Okay? If we do that, and we say that, that's the first approach. Okay? Okay. Now, it's interesting that we did 26, before we get to the next one. I'm sorry, we did source number, what was the first source we did? 20, we'll come back to it in a second. First one we did today. 22, yeah, okay. Said, if you come to you say, it's happening, you look at your life and you say, what did I do wrong? Take a look at this source, it's also very important. Down to be a little more informal. Okay? Source number 34. Okay? Says the following. One of the 613 mitzvot Avi wrote in the Torah is you're not allowed to intentionally make a person feel bad. Doesn't make a difference what. I cannot make you feel bad. You know, you were causing. You did a terrible job. Against the Torah. Where do we see it in the Torah? Source 34. Ha amni mekayei lo tonu ishet amito ba'onat varim. I can't say anything to you that's going to make you feel bad. Even if it's true. Even if it's, you deserve it. I can't just have to say it. That's one of the sources. Why am I bringing that? It's important to you. Ha kesa. So he gives the examples that we all can understand. In Haya Baal Tshuva, if a person did tshuva, and he now is a trying very hard, he's doing all the mitzvot. So what does the guy say? I don't like him. I want to make him feel bad. So what do I say? Al Yomar Lo, it's asur to say to him, Zechor Ma'asecha Rishonim. Look how much kavana you have now. I remember when you never stepped into tshuva. I remember when, you know, you did this and this and this. Can't say it. Everybody understands that, right? Okay. Ben Gerim, Imhaya Ben Gerim, if a person converted, the same thing. Al Yomarlo Pama Sayabotefa. I remember what your parents did against Jews, right? Or I remember what you did when you weren't Jewish. Now I'll do that. Okay, now watch this. Imhaya Ger, Mabal Motara, okay, same idea. If a person was a convert and came to learn Torah. Al Yomar Lo Pesha Halavei Lo Tetrefo. You ate. Today it's true with Jews also. How can the same mouth that ate a ham sandwich, a cheeseburger, now use that same mouth to learn Torah? We don't say that. It's usher. First of all, it's usher to say to the person, and it's not. It's usher to say in general. We wouldn't have any Bali Tshuva if that were true. Okay. I'll give you a bright example. How many people wear this on their head? Or cover their head and speak Lashon Hara. And then they'll go to shul and learn Torah. He said, you used your mouth to speak Lashon Hara 2 days ago. I saw you. Now you want to learn Torah with the same mouth? Now you want to teach Torah? No, I say that to a person. Okay, that's what the Gemara said. Now watch what he said. Im haya yisurin b'ayin alav, if somebody was suffering, a good person was suffering, right? Or if not a good person, al imayuchala imbalin lavi, this means sickness or it means any kind of suffering. Osha yamakaber banav, the worst possible suffering. Again, it's psychological suffering, right? You have to bury your children. Al yomar lo kedera sha'amru lo kaberam lidyo. You're not allowed to say, you know why this happened to you? Because you deserved it because you did this, this, and this. Okay? Everybody understand that, right? Yeah. Let's go further. A little deeper. Was it true by Eov? Did Eov deserve it? Did Eov deserve all the pain he went through?
According to
all of the portion, he was a good guy and was a test and whatever it was, he didn't deserve the pain. So by saying, you know why this happened to you, Eov, his friend said, they were wrong. So not only can't you say it, because you're going to hurt the person, you can't say it because you could be wrong. You know why you had this happening to you? You know why your car broke down? Right? Because you did this and this. Can't say it. But we just learned in Source 22 that if something happens to me, I can say it. Everybody understand?
Only about yourself.
You can say it about yourself, but you can't say it about others. Why not? Because if you say it about yourself and you're wrong, and God is not doing it for this reason, he's doing it for a different reason. So you'll become a better person, you were wrong about that. You don't feel anything wrong, and you'll be a better person. Right? You might get it. But to tell somebody else, I know why God is making you suffer, we can't say it. So you're not allowed to say, and it happens, by the way, all the time. I remember when the school in Ma'alot, the children were attacked and killed in Ma'alot many years ago. And they said, oh, you know why? They didn't check the mezuzahs. The mezuzahs weren't kosher. As if they knew why this happened. And if they knew what God's ideas. Why did it happen in Meron? Why did the terrorists get these people and others? Oh, you know, it's us to do that. The Gemara says, and of course it's halacha as well. And yet many rabbis do it. As if they have a secret line to God. You know why the Holocaust happened? Fill in the blank. Germany was the most non-religious country in the world, of all the Jewish countries in the world. There are people who think that simplistically, and think that, oh, that's why 1.5 million Jewish children died. Makes sense. Okay?
But we don't really say, because your mezuzahs were betrayed, what we usually will say is, you should have your
mezuzahs. Check your mezuzahs is a good method. But why did the terrorists take this school and not that school? Is because they have mezuzahs. It didn't protect them.
Yeah.
As if mezuzahs can protect us.
The school children.
What?
A bus of school children and the rabbi of Ranana, Yitzhak Peretz, said, well, it's because the mezuzahs were never checked. That's why it happened.
I don't think they say because.
No,
they suggest that things are happening.
No, who's going to suggest?
Check your mezuzahs.
No,
yeah,
no, no.
Rabbi Yehuda said because.
No,
he just
no,
said, do it.
No,
okay.
There are rabbis who come out and say, like, you
but
know, COVID
don't say
was
check
because
your mezuzahs,
of
say,
this.
Check their mezuzahs in,
yeah.
in the school
yeah.
and then see if I'm right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can tell you a story. When going back years ago when I was in England and my grandmother died, and they were sitting in Shiva and they were standing morning and evening, and there were one person short for a minion, and they went to a nearby house, and there were two brothers, and they asked one of them if he would come and make up the minion, and he refused. And not long afterwards, he got killed on his motorbike, and we said,
yeah, it's easy to say, oh, if he would have come to Minion, it wouldn't have happened. Yeah. There are many stories that happen like that, but there are also many stories where it's the opposite. I like to talk about the other kind of story. This is a story, true story, that, because I know the people involved, but I'll tell you this one. I just want to get even the year right. It was 2014, cast iron, I think it was, in Gaza. And if you remember, the kids in school, it was very close. They used to go to the hospitals and visits. It was going on, and they used to bring food to the soldiers. And they prepared packages so that they would have candies and this and that. And it was mostly religious kids. It just happened to be, whatever. And they went to the, and they delivered the packages. And the soldier, who was not religious, not anything, whatever, was about to eat it, and he says, wait a second, this came from a religious kid, I better put a kippah on. He says, do you have a kippah? He says, no. He says, well, let me sit next to you, I'll go look, sit next to you and put your kippah on so I can have a thing. And he gets up and he sits down in this chair with bomb. But he got up, right? The chair. In other words, that was the one that, there was a little thing in the old days, but that was where it hit directly. So he said, if he had it, put it on the kippah. Let's say put it in a positive way. He had it put on the kippah, and he hadn't gone across it, then for sure. But again, but we don't know God's mind. There was I think it was the Abarbanel who says, Lu yadativ hayitiv. If I could understand God, I would be God. All these answers, God tells us himself, I treat you like students and like my children. So we get an inkling. But each specific instance, it's very hard to say it happened because of this. Because it's too scary to, first of all, it's scary, and there is in places where it does hit the guy who was wearing a kippah or whatever. All right, let's go on. So therefore, you're not allowed to say, Eo's friends were wrong to say, you know why he's suffering? He had to bury his children because he deserved punishment. So that's one approach. Finish with one approach. We're going to get to five approaches. Hopefully we'll finish, okay? Second approach is based on a topic we haven't done, but it's something I just want to call your attention. Source number 35 says, I'll start in a different way. If you ask most people, what's your main goal in life? Most people. They will tell you in different kinds of ways, my goal in life is to maximize pleasure. Okay? Question is, how do you define pleasure? You may define pleasure, if I can help as many people as possible, I get great pleasure out of that. Right? Somebody else defines pleasure out of being able to eat as many cheeseburgers or as many whatever. Different pleasures, correct? Start pleasure, see, I can see my kids grow up. That's good. That's my greatest pleasure. Different pleasures. But everything is pleasure, whatever that defines. This is from Rabbi Noah Weinberg, talks about this a lot from Asia. Anyway, it says in the Mishnah, if we don't know what the pleasure in Olam Haba is, but it's going to be a pleasure that's greater than any pleasure we can imagine. And it says in the Mishnah that the pleasure in Olam Haba, if you took all the pleasures in your life and you put them into 1 minute of unbelievable pleasure, and you took all the pleasures in your life, put them in there. And we took pleasures in all the people in this room, put them in 1 minute, and then combine all those minutes into one other minute of pleasure, unbelievable pleasure, right? Keep going, right? And we put all the people in the world today, living today, their pleasures into 1 minute of pleasure, and then we added it to each generation, that would be less than 1 minute of pleasure in Olam Haba. That's what it says in Mishnah 35. Yafeh Sha'achat, Sha'achat means a minute, but it's an hour, whatever. Shall korat ruach b'olam haba, pleasure in the world to come. Mikol chaye olam hazeh, from any pleasure added together in this world, say the rabbis. So we don't know what it is, and it's obviously not a physical pleasure, it's not eating, etc. But that's the greatest pleasure, the greatest reward, if you will, correct? Listen to this unbelievable thing. So there's two kinds of rewards. There's reward in this world, and there's reward in the next world. If the better reward is in the next world, correct? Then we should do everything in our power to minimize reward in this world, to maximize reward in that, the next world, correct?
To minimize?
Because if I deserve X amount of reward, so if I have Y amount of reward in this world, it'll be taken away from me in the next world, right?
Or something divided between
We'll get to that, but I deserve X amount of reward for my life, right? So if I get it all in this world, I'm not going to have a lot less in the next world. Okay? Watch. Okay? 36, which is called Yisurim Shel Ahava. Rashi says, this is the basic idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Miyasro Ba'olam Hazeh Velo Shum Avon. Sometimes he makes people suffer in this world even if they don't deserve it. The EO example. Even if they don't deserve it for this specific sin. Kidei laharbot, this is Rashi, scharo ba'olam haba yoter mikidei zichuyotav. In order to give a person greater pleasure in the next world, more than the person deserves. Okay? Now, if you would ask us, maybe you could say, wait, well, let me, don't make yourself for this world. I'd rather not have so much reward in the next world. Not asking us. Okay? For some people who don't deserve to suffer, he makes them suffer because the reward is even greater than the next world. But let's go a little further, okay? And where do we see this? We see this very clearly in, this is the Sfarno explaining. When God talks to us about freedom of choice and reward and punishment, I give before you today life and good and death and evil. Es ha-chayim la'ad, Masmorno says, chayim is the eternal pleasure in the next world. Doesn't mean we're going to live forever. V'yatakom v'erev chayei sha'ah. And the, the temporary pleasure in this world. V'yatamavet la'ad, and death that will be eternal. And the tarah v'sha'ah v'ad chayei sha'ah. He says the evil here is talking about the reward in this world, we'll see in a minute, okay? Haidoti b'chem chayim, therefore know you're going to get greater reward in the next world, therefore choose life. You should choose life, you should choose the next world. If I had a choice, it's greater pleasure, I would choose the next world, okay? Watch this source. That even, this next source is going to blow your mind. Ready? Next two sources. You're going to recognize one character here as a series of sources. When Rabbi Eliezer got sick and he was old, Nichnesu Talmidav Levatro, his students came to do Bikur Cholin. Amar lahem, Chama Azayesh Ba'olam. Rabbi Eliezer, you are the greatest light. You're the greatest light of Torah in the world. You're like a blazing sun. Okay? They started to cry because they realized they're going to lose him. Okay? And who left? Who left? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva left. Rabbi Akiva left. Okay? Okay? It's always Rabbi Akiva left. Because Rabbi Akiva, we'll see, it's always sees the big picture, and most people see the small picture. Okay? Amrulo, Lama Tamasakh, why are you laughing, Rabbi Akiva? Our Rebbe's dying. Amar lahem, Why you crying? Amulo, Eshar Sefer Torah Shoyim Tzar. By the way, this is a very fantastic story. How can a living Sefer Torah be suffering? Because obviously he was sick. He was not only just sick, he was suffering and he's sick. We see him suffering in the sickness. We shouldn't cry. By the way, certain people call living Sefer Torah. It's very sad. And I would say most Jews, certainly religious Jews, will do more to save a Sefer Torah than they will a human being. Right? When I see a human being fall, I would hope that everybody in this room would go over to help them. But if you see a Sefer Torah fall, you will run over to the Beit Sefer Torah, not fall. Right? It's like, you know, Sefer Torah is not more important than a human being. But this is a living Sefer Torah who was suffering. Our question, why is he suffering? He's such a great guy. He's terrific. Listen to this. Because he's suffering, I'm very happy. My whole life, I know him for many, many years. And I see him going through life. His wine never got sour, which means everything went right for him in the world. The apish tanoloke, no bugs got into his flax. The ancient mavish, everything, these are all physical terms. But he had a great life, he had great children, he had great everything. Students, he had everything, you know, the perfect life. And I see this, he had the whole life. The angel shalom is mavish, amati. Shema chas v'shalom kibel rebi olamo. If he's not suffering in this world, maybe he got rewarded for all his goodness in this world. And he says, Yachshav shani roeh Rebbe Mitzar, but now that he's suffering, ani sameach, because I know he's suffering and he doesn't deserve it, he will be getting great reward in the next world, which is the most important reward. You understand what he's saying? The people who suffer most in this world other tzaddikim, because they're going to get a bigger reward in the next world. And the people who have the greatest life in this world are who? Are who? The Rishayim. Because they used up all their grade B reward in this world, and they don't get anything in the next world. Right? That's the concept of the second one. Now, if I didn't have a pasuk to prove it to me, I could say, okay, it's very nice. We're going to see if pasuk proves it. But you understand the concept. The more a person enjoys in this world, probably the greater Russia he is. By the way, it says that the same thing also. Who do parents ignore and don't punish? If you come to the conclusion, we call it tough love today or whatever, do whatever you want. I can't help you. Do whatever you want. That's the worst punishment a parent can give to a kid. They don't understand it. You give up on them. So that's what God is saying also. Only people who have a chance to do tshuva, who will understand, who will recognize, if you're not going to do tshuva, what's the point in my telling you about suffering? You understand? So that's the first one. This one says the opposite. If it's about pleasure, let them get all their reward in this world. And it's a pasuk in Devarim. It's, look what it says. It says it very clearly. Look what it says, 39. Umishalein l'sonav el panav, and God pays reward in this world to his enemies, laha avido, to make sure that he will disappear forever, to get rid of him, which means the next world. Lo, I like the new one. Right? Okay, umishalein l'sonav el panav l'havido. God intentionally gives reward to his enemies in this world in order to get rid of him. Lo yacher l'sonav el panav mishalein lo. God, those hated by God, in other words, the evil people, God will pay him in this world. But you keep the mitzvot, and the implication is you'll get paid in the next world. So the more a person enjoys in this world, you have to be suspect that person may be a Russia. That's what Rabbi Akiva was saying. I'm so happy that my Rebbe is suffering. I I know he's a good person. And that he'll get the greater reward in the next world.
But if a reward is supposed to be given in this world, then,
it says, well, who says it's supposed to be given in this world? Source 42, just jump to Rabbi Kibihi, the Amar, Schar Mitzvah Bahai Lech Amal Lecha. There is no reward for mitzvot given in this world. Even though it says it, Shema, etc., etc. And it makes sense, because if you're doing mitzvot, which are, if you will call them, spiritual acts, you should get a spiritual reward.
But we say it, there's rewards, like,
we'll get to it.
Elisha ben Avuya and the kid climbing the tree.
Yeah. Of course, it says in the Shema, if we keep all the mitzvot, right, we will get wealthy. We will we'll be shalom. We'll be shalom. It does say that. But the rabbis interpret it to say, listen, as I said last week, the reason for that is because you can't tell somebody, well, if you wait 75 years, you're really going to enjoy your one. It's hard to tell that to a person for 75 years. Keep it all in because you'll have a great reward in the end. But it says in Source 42, and remember, every source is not necessarily normative Judaism. But I will show you it. So it's true. What Stephen's saying, and this I believe is the answer, is Source 46. Okay, I wish we had more time, but let's go. Source 46. There are some mitzvot that are so powerful and so important that you get reward both in this world and in the next world. Okay? I'm saying that because the Mishnah is saying that. In other words, generally, you'll get reward for mitzvot in the next world. Right? But there are some mitzvot that are so important and so crucial that you get. Where do we see this? It's a, we say it every morning in davening. It's a Gemara in Shabbos. You eat the fruits in the world, in this world. Karen Kayemet, lo la la ma ba. What's Karen Kayemet? Don't tell me Jewish agency. Okay, but what is Karen Kayemet? What is the Karen? The Karen is the principal. The Peirot is the interest. So, with some things are so important that the interest you get rewarded for in this world. But the principle is reward for the next world. Karen Kayem Lamaba. What are they? Elohim. Kibud Avayim. Right? Honoring your parents. Actually, the word should be dignify, keeping your parents' dignity. Gemilut Chasadim. These are big ones. You know, Gemilut Chasadim can cover everything you do all day. Gemilut Chasadim, helping people in need. Right? You find any way you want. Hashkamat Beit HaMidrash. This is for you. Tell everybody. You want to get reward in this world and next world? Get to the Beit Midrash early. Shacharit v'arvit. V'hachmasat orchim. We don't do the hachmasat orchim so much today because we have hotels and we have people. But when people used to go from city to city and didn't know anybody, and you come in and all of a sudden you go to the shul and they invite you to stay for a whole Shabbos, it changes your life. So it's a very important thing. Bikur cholim. Remember, we don't do bikur cholim. Bikur cholim properly. People used to be sick and they used to stay in their homes, right? But people, when do we do bikur cholim? When somebody we know gets sick, right? But the mitzvah is to do bikur cholim that anybody gets sick, even non-Jews, right? You want to do a great mitzvah? Decide, I'm going to spend the next 2.5 hours, go, there's a local hospital here, I don't even know.
Barzilai.
I'm going to go to Barzilai. I don't know anybody who's sick. But I'm just going to go to room to room and say, hi, how are you? And maybe buy a few flowers, give them a flower. Want to do a big mitzvah? That's the mitzvah. The problem of having enough money, but Israel made it much, much tougher. Because in Israel, in certain society, certain sectors of Israeli society, you're expected to come up with money for a half an apartment. Never heard of the word rent? No, you have to buy an apartment. Because it's going to go up, 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 up. Hachmasat kala, so they can get married.
What is that really, though? What would that be?
Hachmasat kala means have enable people to get married who want to get married, right? There are men, throughout history, people couldn't get married because there had to be what's called a dowry. So if the father of the bride couldn't pay a certain dowry in whatever society it was. But today in Israel, I have a cousin, I'm going to spend time. I have a cousin who learned in the Mir, and he learned, he was one of the top guys, and he wanted to get married in Israel, he wanted to stay in Israel, and he couldn't, because his parents didn't have money. He had to go back to America to get married. Baruch Hashem got married, moved back here, he had many kids. But the point is, the idea that you have to come up with, in America you don't have this, you have to come up with a certain money, a million shekel, in order to get, in America they spend a million shekel on the wedding. Here they spend it on the apartment. You know, that there's no concept of rent. But anyway, let's go on, because we're not going to finish. I want to finish. Ulvayat ha'meit, giving dignity to somebody in death, like you do in life, which is a different thing. Iyun tefillah, understanding the davening, not just saying the words. You know, you think the Mishnah didn't understand us. Same problems they had then. Hava'at shalom ben adam l'chaveiro. Two people aren't talking to each other, or you're not talking to somebody, and you make the first move and create shalom between two people. Bein ish l'ishto, husband and a wife. All these you get reward in the next world. They're so important, you get reward in both worlds. The Talmud Torah, you get from both worlds. Gen eri kula. Okay? So that's the second one. Okay? The irony of the second one is, the more somebody enjoys this world, the more you have to worry about them. And the more somebody suffers, you get Baruch Hashem suffering. Right? Okay.
Chassidus doesn't
disagree with this. Okay? God says in Tehillim, David HaMelech says it, but words of Hashem. The third approach is that of the testing. Question is, why did the teacher have to test? You know, in the 60s, they stopped testing for about 5 years in university in case they pass-fail. It was an utter disaster. Because nobody studied, nobody learned anything. They knew they wouldn't have to, all they knew was have to pass. Why is it important to test? Especially if you know you're the best student in the class. You're going to get a 98, whether I look at the exam or not, I know you're going to get a 98. Why do you have to take the test? What's the answer? There is no answer. You should know. Because that's my judgment, right? But it's not about my judgment. Even though I think you're going to get a 98, and even though you think you're going to get a 98, till you actually take the test and get that 98, you don't feel like you really passed anything. You really underproved yourself. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So the third approach is God tests us. Why does he test us? To prove ourselves to ourselves and to prove Judaism to the world. Where does it say? And who does he test? Okay. 47. Hashem Tzadik Yivchan. He only tests people who have the ability to withstand the difficulty of the test and pass. God does not test people. It's like in the old days, he used to make, I think you do that at the hobby in one of these chugim, where you make pots, pottery out of clay, correct?
Yeah.
And right? Some pots are very strong, some pots are very weak. You can tell, it's made properly, it's stronger because it has a center of gravity, I'm not sure the physics of it, whatever. Now, how does the potter, the person who made the pot, know if it's a strong pot? He gives it a whack, and if it can hold up, then he knows it's a strong pot. He's only going to give it a whack if he's pretty sure it's going to withstand it. He's not going to give it a whack when he thinks it may not make it, right? That's what it's saying here. God only tests people who he's pretty sure. He only makes people suffer for people who can withstand the suffering and not lose all hope and lose all faith, right? He's not going to do it to somebody who's going to, the first sign of trouble, they say, okay, I'm out of here. And if you look throughout Jewish history, Jews did not leave Judaism. Those who left under tremendous duress. They didn't say, if God doesn't give me $1 million by tomorrow, I'm not going to be a Jew anymore. You don't have that in anything like that. Because that's not...
אם יש לי קרן גדולה, אני יכול למכור קצת מהקרן הזאת? לאנשים?
אתה יכול לעשות מה שאתה רוצה.
לא, אני שואל.
אני לא מבין, איזה קרן?
כתבת פה, כתוב פה, הקרן קיימת לעולם הבא. אז יש לי הרבה בקרן.
So they talk about it. I want you to know. I'll tell you two stories. We got to go on. Okay, two stories. First story is that what do you call it? Is if I say to you, listen, you davened really, really well. I will pay you $1,000 to give some of your schar for davening to me. Can I do that?
Don't they do it all the time when you pay someone to say?
No. It says, please daven for this person, and I'll daven. But the Pope used to do that. The Pope used to do, you have sins, I'll buy off your sins.
Oh, accusation.
Right. But the halacha is not going to do that. Except by Zvulun and Yisachar. Okay. Second thing, I remember doing this, somebody did this, and I said, people say, I don't believe in the world to come. Students were telling me, I don't believe. Right? So I said, you really don't believe? At the time, $20 was a lot. Don't say $100 today. So I would take out a $100 bill and I'd say, you really, really don't believe. Right? Can I give you this $100 and you write, I don't, I bequeath my alam haba to nothing. Nobody ever did.
We lost our Shabbos yesterday. I had a man. ארבע שנים, בא אליי מישהו, שפו אותו, אבא שלו נפטר. הוא לא אומר, הוא חשוב היה שהבינו שנה...
הוא רוצה להיות כהן?
לא. שיגיד קדיש על אבא שלו במשך 17 חודש. אז אמרתי לו, אין בעיה, אני לוקח את המצווה. הוא אומר, לא, אני משלם, אבא שלי השאיר כסף.
היה
לי ויכוח איתו.
זה מקובל בעולם שלנו. לאנשים לשלם להם להגיד קדיש. למה? כי אין הלכה שאני חייב להגיד קדיש. לכן זה... אבל...
לא,
זה...
מצאנו פשרה. קנינו בזה, לקחנו את הכסף וקנינו טליתות ותפילים לחבר בר מצווה שאין להם. ארבע סטים.
יפה מאוד. יפה מאוד. אוקיי,
זה המשיך.
כן.
אוקיי. Third approach is a test. Hashem tests us. Why, again, I'm going to say it very quickly, because Hashem wants to prove to us, that we can prove to ourselves, that we are worthy. I don't say it, the Ramban says it. That's why, the only place it really says somebody was tested by, is by what? By the Akedah. God tested Abraham. Didn't God know what he will ask, what's going to be the result of the test? So why did he have to test Abraham? At the very end of the Akedah, 48 is the beginning, and 49, wherever that is, at the end of the Akedah, God says, it doesn't say here, but the Rambam says more in Ruchim, he says, Ataya dati ki yirei elokim ata. Now I know you're a God-fearing person. You didn't know it before, right? But a person grows through the test. If you've been through suffering and you get stronger through it, then you're a better person. Everybody will agree to that, correct? And that's what it means. So God tests us, and the Rambam says he tested it, the Rambam says, tested it so the whole world would know that Judaism is against the idea of child sacrifice, and more important, they said, Abraham's a good guy, but what did he have to give up? He didn't show how great he really is. So what did he have to give up in life? He doesn't have a kid. So God purposely took his most precious possession. Are you willing to? Because the whole world heard about it. And the whole world reacted, said that was the Kiddush Hashem. That Abraham was the kind of person who would even give up his child. We waited 100 years for it. Said, okay, I'm going to leave quickly. You can read source 50, 51, 52. 52 is what I said. Al tashlach yachal na'ar tachamumah. Ki ata yadati, God says. Now I know. Ki yirei elokim ata, you are God-fearing. Of course God knew before. It means you proved it to yourself and to the world. Same thing. When Rabbi Akiva was taken out, same story again. He was taken out and he was taken by the pitchforks, right? And he was being combed and he was suffering and terrible and the Romans were trying to kill him. Big smile on his face, says source number 53. So the student said, why are you laughing? Why are you happy, Rabbi? My whole life I said, I love God with all my soul, with all my body, with everything. But I wasn't sure if put to the test, I could really give up my life happily to keep my Judaism. But now I know I can. Okay? So, again, if you look at all the things that happen in life as tests, can I do it or not? Can I overcome this or not? When a child does something that makes you nuts and you don't say a word, that's the test. You're dying to tell the kid, shh, do it. So if you look at it as a test, it's the third way why we suffer. Okay? Fourth way. Again, I'm doing this very quickly because of time. Okay? From the very beginning of time, we saw, what is the nature of punishment? What is the nature of punishment? The very first sin, what was the nature of punishment? What was the punishment? What was the sin? He ate the fruit, right? What was the punishment for man? What was the punishment for woman?
Pain in childbirth.
Pain in childbirth.
And that you had to work.
And pain and suffering while you're going to...
feed yourself.
Get food. Correct? They had something very much in common. Right? Besides the fact that the two greatest drives that human beings have, sex and food. Besides that, they have in common that in order to get what you really want in life, you have to suffer for it. That was the punishment. And that's how the framework of the punishment. You can't have, even till today, with all the medical, all that they put you to sleep, a woman can't give birth without some pain. Some people say the real punishment was you can't bring up children without pain. Right? They're your greatest possessions. And yet, we suffer in order to have children physically, in order to bring them up the way and become these people that we want them to be. It's part of the process. So what they say is, the fourth approach is, part of the process of achieving joy in the world is that you have to have some pain. And I'll prove to you in a minute. It's like, there's a great line in, you know, there was a movie called Oh God, and Oh God 2, and Oh God 3, and Oh God 3, and they asked him, how could you have, he said, I haven't been able to figure out that by one-sided coin. There's no such a thing as health if you don't have sickness. We can't appreciate health. If nobody ever got sick, we wouldn't say, oh, we're healthy. There wouldn't be a concept of health, right? If people weren't poor, we could never appreciate wealth. Take anything we like in the world. You can't have it unless you suffer for it.
Aren't there different levels of suffering? Like doesn't the Gemara talk about putting your hand in your pocket, taking a coin if it's the wrong coin? Isn't that a level of suffering?
No, he says, why are you punished? Because I made he was so careful about every ani that he made the ani wait and, quote, embarrassed him, because on his level, that was already, he was causing pain to this ani. And we cause it all the time because we don't have that sensitivity. And I'm saying something else. Every gym, every health club says it. The more you suffer, the greater shape you'll be.
No pain, no gain.
Right? No pain, no gain. Right? We become physically fit when we suffer. If you don't go exercise and you don't suffer in the exercise, how many marathoners don't suffer? Nobody. Right? So what do they do it for? Because the gain is worth more than the pain. And that's the fourth approach. If we had no suffering in the world, we would have no pleasure. We would not be able to appreciate anything. I'll tell you a very interesting simile. Think about this. Guy, wealthiest king, 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, and finally has a child, and he never wants this child to suffer. And he sees the child's about a year old, and the child's trying to walk, and keeps falling down, he hurts his face, hurts his thing. So I don't want my child to suffer. I have enough servants. I'm going to carry the child wherever he has to go. Child wants to go to Benedict. Carry the child. When he's this little, it's one person. When he's my size, 27 people, right? And the whole, his whole life, when he gets to be 10, he's still not walking. Anytime he wants to go, whatever, he wants to go down from his bedroom, whatever. What happened to that child? That child never learned how to walk. The child became totally dependent on all the people. Right? Is that what we want? not to ever suffer. You have to suffer in order to learn how to walk. Can I say, what's the hardest part about the riding a bicycle? The concrete, right? Because that's life. That's what the fourth approach is saying. You can't have life without suffering. Because if you don't suffer, there's no, how should I say, you haven't accomplished anything.
Suffering is good.
Suffering is good, that's what it's saying. In order to accomplish something, suffering by itself is not good. So in order to accomplish something, so you either have to take it as a test, or say to somebody, now where do we see that? The greatest joy for the Jewish people is Mashiach, correct? It's always called Chevlei Mashiach. You know where the word Chevlei comes from?
Giving birth.
Giving birth. Childbirth, the same suffering that a woman suffers during childbirth is what we're all going to suffer as we get to Mashiach, Chevlei Mashiach. Why? Because that's part of the process. And that's what the fourth approach is. Okay? The process itself requires suffering, or else you can't appreciate anything in life. If you always were wealthy, you never appreciate wealth, right? I feel sorry for the people who were, and there are many people today, they're multimillionaires before their children are born, and they give the kids everything. These kids never learn what it means. Okay, let's go on because the time we're getting to the end. Okay? All right, and all the, I can give you the sources, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Sources 63 and 64 are particularly important because what we consider, what basically we're saying is we consider suffering is a necessary component to have joy, whether it's because it's a punishment, whether it's a test, whether it's the next world, etc. The Gemara says something very interesting. It says, from our perspective, when somebody dies, when the good news comes, you say a certain kind of bracha. When you have bad news, like somebody dying, you say, what do you say? Well, Diana, right? With God is the true judge, but we don't understand why. Look at source number 63 says, Chayav adam levarech al ha-ra'ah, k'shem shemevarech al ha-tovah. If you know that it's all coming from God and there's a purpose to our suffering, that which we consider evil, we will make a bracha with the same joy that, no, I don't know anybody who's at that level. There are people at that level. With the same joy that we make on the bracha for Ketov. Okay? When a woman suffers through birth, let's say childbirth, a day later, she forgets about the suffering. So she doesn't even feel the suffering, correct? Because if the kid is healthy, right? Because that was a temporary thing. This is a life. So basically what it says is we have to understand that in the next world, there won't be anything bad and good. Bad and good is a subjective term from our perspective. So therefore, you have to give a bracha on look at 64. In the next world, we will not see this world in the same way. When things from our perspective are good, we say the bracha we say when from our perspective things are suffering, terrible. Right? But olam haba, when we see the real perspective in olam haba, everything that happens in this world, we will say, atov mamitiv. We will understand why the suffering is good. Okay? I'm going to leave you with one basic thought. And I hope I didn't answer anything, but it gave perspective a little bit. Okay? The person who suffered probably the greatest single day in the Torah is who? Where? When did he suffer? You don't get to go to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe. I believe his brother suffered more. The day that he was made Kohen Gadol, his two sons died. Going to the Mishkan. I mean, we never really understand why.
The happiest day of the year.
Okay. What was Aaron's reaction, source 65?
Be quiet.
Vayidom Aaron. It's more than just be quiet. The word quiet means shatak. Check it, right? But he don't means he was, as we say, numb, if you will, but totally passive, right? Amod dom, right? It's not amod, it's amod dom. Not even indicating there was anything wrong. But he don't want to, he didn't question, he didn't scream at God, he didn't go back to his tent and let it all out. He didn't understand, he let it out. The Klausenberger Rebbe, let me remember his name, okay, said a fantastic perush on something we all know. But at every Brit Milah, we say the following pasuk, 66. Va'avor alayach erech mitoseset v'damayach, v'amar lach v'damayach hayi, v'amar lach v'damayach hayi. So the simple translation is that the Jew lives through the blood that's spilled, okay? And you look at Jewish history, you'd say, okay, all the Jewish blood that was spilled allows us to be here today. And that's the simple perush, or the spilled, is for the Brit Milah, etc., etc. But along comes the Klausenberger and says, the word damayet means, it does mean blood, but we know from the word by Doma Aaron, it also means be quiet. He says, b'damayet chayi. If you can get through it and not question, and not say, I don't understand how God's doing it, I can't be religious anymore. And you just like Aaron, didn't understand, and never understood probably, and yet was able to go on and become the Aaron Kohen Gadol. So the Klausenberger, who went through and buried her wife and family in the Holocaust, and said, I have to be quiet about the past, and I have to build in the future. And he rebuilt, Tanya, he built the hospital, and he built many, many communities. And he said, B'damaya chayi, you want to live? Don't question and don't every day get up and say, how could this happen? Because there are no answers. The real approach is that they don't understand, okay? And I don't say it, again, there's one day, by the way, in the Jewish year, where you're allowed to question God, okay? Only because Yirmiyahu HaNavi did it. What's the first word we say on Tisha B'Av?
Eicha.
Eich! How could you do it, God? Why? That's the day we're allowed to question. Doesn't mean we're going to get any answers, but that's the day we're allowed to question. Every other day, we're not equipped with Amaya Chayim, because ultimately, with everything I said, and it makes, good, God, very nice, and David Ashir, etc., when you're suffering, whatever that suffering is, it's not the psukim are not going to say, okay, I'm not going to suffer. It's not going to help you. We can't understand. Now, I don't say it, the Mishnah says it, this we finish. Okay? 71. Rav Yanai Omer. This is a Mishnah Avot. Okay, predicted how we're going to feel. Ein biyadeinu lo mishavat harishaim. It is not in our hands to understand how some evil people have shalva, peace, greatness, and whatever you want to put in for joy, etc. The af lo mi yisurei tzadikim, and we can't understand everything about why certain tzadikim suffer. It's a Mishnah, because without this Mishnah, you say maybe if I just understood a little better, I could understand why. No. No, with this I'll finish. People suffer when their parents die, correct? Parents pass away, everybody suffers, right? So I asked them, I said, and it doesn't do with the age of the parents. I said, what would you rather have? Would you rather have that you don't suffer from your parents' death? And they suffer from your death, that's a lot greater suffering. The way of the world is that parents pass away, right? And even though it's natural, and even though when it happens, you just can't handle it. And God understands that. Don't misunderstand. God wants us to be upset. He wants us to cry out, how could you do? But what's the alternative? Do you understand my point? So suffering is part of our existence. I have a specific belief, and with this I finish, that we made a list of the things that bother us most. right? As soon as we take care of the thing that really bothers us most, we come up with the next thing that bothers us. And as soon as we took care of that, we come up with the next. Life is problems. Life is difficulty. Life is suffering. If we can get joy to understand that the joy comes and is greater than all our suffering, then we've made it. But to say we cannot, I want to go through life without suffering is like the kid who wants to go through life without walking. That kid suffered more than all of us. Okay? Imagine he has to go to the bathroom when he's 40 years old. Imagine him going on a date. Okay? And he's being carried by everybody.
And he's a girl big enough to carry him.
And imagine he has to go to the bathroom. Okay? You're doing a terrible thing not eliminating suffering. You understand? So we shouldn't eliminate it. We should try to minimize it, but not eliminate it. With this, I thank you. I hope it was helpful. And I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, I want to say one thing. First of all, I want to thank Stephen for putting this whole thing together, and Hannah Allison. They do so much for the community, but this is just another one. For 5 months, I heard from Stephen, nobody's going to come out to learn Torah in Ashkelon in English. That doesn't exist. And I want to show you something, and I want to give you something to show you that it doesn't have to be that way. Okay? I happened to get this in the mail because I grew up there. I moved to a community when I was 14 years old. The first Friday night I got there, with difficulty, we had to wait for a 10th person. It was the only minyan in town. We had to wait for a 10th person. Okay? Not like here. Okay?
Who is this?
I'll show you. Okay? I'm giving you now, this shows up, and this is one out of now 23 shuls in this community. This is how much learning goes on in the shul. Okay? And if you look, most of it is after hours. These are not people who are retired. This is one shul in Teaneck, New Jersey. Okay? And this is how much learning they have. And if you go over there at shul, it's unique, the whole community. At 11 o'clock at night, you see the lights on. These people learn Torah. What I'm saying is, when I got there, it was much, 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 much worse than Ashkelon. So there is hope for every community.
Rabbi, many people want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everything you've done for us.
I appreciate it. Okay.
How's the trip going?
By the way, does it look like anything?
No, it's quite funny.